Welcome to the Balanced Feminine Podcast. We are your hosts, Maddie and Katie.
This is a show centered on helping women find a balanced lifestyle that nourishes mind, body, and spirit.
Hello, welcome to the Balanced Feminine Podcast. I'm so excited because I'm joined today with Tanai Milgram. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
Okay, perfect. Tanai is a women's relation. How do you say that? Women's relationships coach?
Yeah, well, I'm a women's coach and I coach women and feeling unapologetically self-expressed in their relationships.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it really comes back to you, you know, and seeing why you're not asking for what you want, why you're not sharing your feelings or following your desires, and how that gets in the way of your relationships, how you're not showing up as confident or turned on or alive or connected as you desire in your relationships. Because all the people pleasing gets in the way and we get worried about, you know, what will people think? Will I get rejected? Will they leave me? So we just end up people pleasing, and that's actually what gets in the way of us feeling fully self-expressed.
Wow. I love that. Amazing. Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself on this journey and your story.
Amazing. Okay. So I am originally from Venezuela. I grew up in a very sheltered Jewish community. So, you know, I always expected to grow up I was never really sure about what job I would do. I just knew that in my early 20s, I'd meet a man, we'd get married, and I'd have a family. But then in my teens, I started realizing that that when I would start a relationship with men, it was like awesome when it was the beginning and there was the chase and the flirting. But then once it got serious, I actually was consumed with anxiety and fear and suddenly was not interested in the person anymore.
Yep.
And I didn't really know what to make of it at the time. But then in college, it was a pattern. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? You know, the same thing keeps happening where I'm into a man. And then once things get serious, I'm disgusted by them. And you know, the pattern was that I'd emotionally cheat on them. So I'd start talking to someone else. I'd make up like all the reasons why they're, you know, not for me. I'd start to grow distance from them. And then one day, from one day to the next in their eyes, I was just like, hey, this isn't working, or I don't want to be with you anymore.
Wow.
But at the same time, I deeply craved connection. I deeply wanted a partner. And that's what led me to this work. I'm like, okay, this is obviously something going on in here. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got started. I also was really insecure about my body and very insecure about my ability to do something with myself in the world. I, you know, make money, have a career.
Yeah.
So that's what opened the door for me.
Amazing. So you and I actually did a course together. And I tell people, I'm like, I did a sex course. And they're like, what? So can you tell us a little bit about like how you discovered this work? Because I feel like, you know, what we were saying, I said to you earlier is like, people I think are like taken back at first from this idea of like women being fully expressed within themselves and like talking about sex and talking about relationships with men. And it's like, I wish more women could discover it because it's so fucking fulfilling. So how did you come on this path?
Yeah. So for this work specifically, I had just done another course called Landmark.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And that's the course that I did sort of to like dig deeper into why am I so afraid of relationships?
Yeah.
And after this weekend, I spoke to my friend and I said, you know, I really think I want to work with someone one-on-one. And she recommended our coach, Amy, who's the one that ran that program we did together.
Yeah.
Amy at the time was not really a relationship and sex coach.
I remember.
Yeah. So during our coaching, she was like, hey, I'm reading this book called Pussy. Do you want to read it? And I'm like, okay. So I read this book and it's literally all about this woman who's empowered in like considering her pussy as the place that she, you know, connects to her power. And it's about reclaiming the word pussy because, you know,
yeah,
if you haven't done this work, pussy for you is a really offensive word. Whereas for women in this work, it's a really empowering one.
Right.
It's like the way, you know, you're told to connect to your heart. It's like connect to your pussy. You know, what does she want?
Right.
So at first I was very, you know, triggered by it, or I guess I just wasn't connecting to it. But then, you know, the more I got into it, the more I realized how important it is for a woman to feel sexy and sensual and confident in her body. I just thought only Victoria's Secret models can do that.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that a big source of confidence for myself as a woman to feel like a woman is to feel desirable, to feel confident, to feel sexy, to feel like I can move my body however way I want.
Yeah.
Those were things I just weren't, you know, they just weren't in my sphere at all. I didn't think that was possible.
Totally.
And the only way that I really thought was possible was with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, let me get all of my insecurities out of the way with this, you know, thing that's going to numb them.
Right.
So actually this work is about looking at all those fears and not being afraid of them and seeing yourself as this woman who's everything. You know, I'm a woman who's sad, angry, sexy, low, high, enthusiastic,
yeah,
bitchy, and accepting all of it. So I don't know if that really answered the question, but
no, it does. I love that. I mean, so like I was saying, I have been following you guys, like all of the work that you, like all of you women are doing. And it's been really monumental for my journey with my relationship with men because, and I have read the Alison Armstrong books most recently. And I remember thinking, okay, I remember the first moment that I realized like, holy shit, I actually think so negatively about men. Like I let it come through and I was like, I don't trust them. And I think that anything that they're doing is bad and that they don't want to show, like their intentions are bad. And so it's been really, really, I mean, so helpful to have you women to look at and be like, here are women that are like paving the path for new relationships with men, because that's like not what we were taught and not in our society at all. Yeah. So
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's wild to think that I was in your shoes once upon a time. Yeah. And now I'm surrounded by incredible conscious men.
Yeah.
You know, there's once upon a time where I'm like, where are all the men? And now it's like, all of my friends are these men.
Yeah.
I'm not even dating them, but I have all this evidence that this is possible. And like my question to you would be, how much do you trust yourself?
Right. And that's probably the biggest question that I'm learning right now. And flat out, like, I think that my relationship, like my trust with myself is not at the place that I would want it to be, which is the reflection of probably why I have these relationships with men.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you my personal example, which is that growing up as a privileged Jewish white girl, most of things were done for me. You know, I've always been like very independent, very go-getter. I like figure things out on my own, but there was a sense of the man will take care of it.
Yeah.
And I remember that at any time I wanted to manifest a guy, I would just picture a man who can protect me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a desire that came out of, I can't protect myself.
Yeah.
And because I was just, you know, raised to think, oh, one day I'm just going to get married and I probably won't work and someone else will take care of all my responsibilities.
Right.
I didn't think I could take care of my responsibilities.
Right.
So imagine that amount of pressure that I was putting on men. Now, we're not like our egos. It's not natural for us to trust.
Right.
So what would happen is that I would keep dating men and find the evidence that I can't trust them. It's like, look, they can't take care. Like they can't take care of me. They can't hold me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, they don't need to hold me. I need to hold myself. So it wasn't until I felt like, yeah, I can hold myself. I can take care of myself, that I wasn't even looking. My question wasn't even, hey, is this man trustworthy? That question disappears. You don't even ask it because you know that you got yourself. So, you know, I started building the masculine within me, which is creating structures for myself, you know, holding myself in the mess, like allowing myself to be in messy feelings and feeling okay with it. Totally. Finding my purpose, all of these ways that I could feel like I trust myself, because then no matter what anybody else does, I'm going to be okay.
I love that. So that brings me to another question, because there's been so much talk of this masculine versus feminine relationship. And for people that are listening that don't really have like any indication of what that kind of means or what that looks like, can you kind of give an example or explain like a situation of like the idea of a masculine versus feminine?
Yeah, absolutely. So masculine and feminine are just energies that we all have within us. Mm-hmm. And they're like a push and pull, give and receive. My favorite image is a river, and how the river needs, you know, the river bank or whatever it's called. Yeah. Like it needs a container for it to flow.
Yeah.
So if you have a stronger feminine energy, then it is in your nature. It is more aligned for you to be in the flow, to be in the receptive mode. Mm. Whereas if you have a stronger masculine, the masculine is all about leading, giving, presence, structure. So that's going to be more in your nature. So whatever you have more of, you're going to feel more aligned if you're in that.
Okay.
And it's like, and they're like opposites, like yin and yang. So they're like the two opposite ends of a polarity.
Right.
So in a relationship, you know, in order for there to be polarity, one person's in the feminine energy and the other one's in the masculine. So mm-hmm. one's giving, the other's receiving. That, you know, you could even see it in sex. Someone's penetrating and the other person's receiving.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people think that, or at least I used to think that letting a man lead would mean giving away my independence, mm-hmm. Having them do whatever they want. But really, it's for my benefit. Like, I feel so good when a man is leading. And a perfect example is when you're dancing and a partner dance.
Yeah.
It feels so incredible to be led by a man when you're dancing, or someone in their masculine, so that you can just relax.
Right.
And it feels so good to be, you know, led that way.
Yeah.
The same way that it does when, you know, if you're in your feminine, it has to do more with being in your feelings and just like flowing them out and being in a mess. And it feels so good for someone to hold that and to be, you know, more stable and listening to you and holding space for that. It just feels so good.
Yeah. So, well, as you're saying this, it's like very interesting, because a lot of my personal journey with men are coming up, and it's like, for me, it was like, okay, so I grew up in a household where my mom was very in her feminine, and but it wasn't honored. So like she was always very emotional and like, you know, kind of like not all over the place, but I would say like her emotions were kind of flowing. They were really flowing, and there was never any space for her to be held. So like anyone, my dad or my brothers would just be like, she's so overly emotional, like, and be like pretty disrespectful about it. So in my brain, like, I grew up being like, in order to take care of myself, like, I need to just be like very strong, unemotional, like, more so in my masculine. And in turn, it's been really difficult for me in relationships, because I haven't allowed myself to be taken care of. And then I get to the point where I'm like, you know, after the whole, what you were saying, like the fun phase is over. And then I'm like, you can't take care of me. I'm out. Like, I don't, you know, like, I don't need you anymore sort of situation. And I like have realized that it's a lot of it is like a fear of commitment, but B, it's like my relationship to men and my relationship to myself. And I think that like with society, especially, we're always told like, you know, in order to gain respect, like we need to, if we want equal rights, if we want equal pay, like why should women be allowed to like cry in the workplace or something? So we're not told to honor our emotions. And that, I think, has been a huge detriment, like that, a huge impact on the way that we show up for ourselves and in relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, your mom and your dad, and you know, I think because therapy for a lot of people has this negative connotation of like, oh, all you do is talk about your relationship with your parents, but it's actually so much more relevant than people think. I mean, the relationship with the feminine is your relationship with your mom, right, and the relationship with the masculine is the relationship with your dad. Mm-hmm. And the way that you show up with your parents is going to be how you show up with your partner. It just is. Like, we're biologically, like, in order to reproduce, yeah, we're like biologically attracted to people that remind us of our parents. And in order to heal our traumas, we attract the same, you know, dynamics as we had it with our parents.
Yeah.
So because they feel safe, but also it's just an opportunity to heal those things. So yeah, I absolutely. And, you said something about the emotions that I wanted to say, but no, you're right. We're really not taught that it's okay to just express our emotions. And our parents, you know, especially all the generations before us, they didn't have any approval for us to cry.
Right. Right.
So they were just acting out of what they didn't have approval for in themselves.
Right.
You know, so we were just raised by a generation who had no space for their own emotions. So as kids, we were told, stop crying, you know?
Yeah.
Keep it to yourself, like hold it in.
Right. And I think like for women, it's like biologically men and women are so inherently different, and we shouldn't try and put each other in the same box. Like the way that I deal with a circumstance versus the way that like my partner would deal with it is going to be so incredibly different. And actually, like through you guys and like listening and reading and doing like so much like learning about this stuff, I'm able to show up in a way and be like, I'm feeling like insecure in this moment, and I need you to like step into your masculine in order for me to like feel held. And it's like instantly his reaction is different than if I were to be like, you're not listening to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part.
Yeah. And you know, I would even take it a step further.
Yeah.
Which is that we don't actually need anyone else to do anything for us to feel any way. So, you know, I've been in a situation like that as well, where I just share, I'm feeling really insecure.
Yeah.
Because I sense, you know, you're in a place of uncertainty, and you're very emotional, and it's bringing a lot of insecurity in me. Yeah. I don't feel safe. Period.
Oh, wow. And then
from there you could express a desire, but it's in that moment, it's like just sharing the impact.
Yeah.
Just being vulnerable and sharing that impact is enough.
Yeah.
Because the moment that you tell someone how you need them to be so that you can be okay, you're putting an expectation on them.
Oh, fuck. I love that you just shared that. I'm like going to go
crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's wild. And that's also something like we expect that like we're responsible for someone else's like emotions, which is just not true, but it's hard because when you're keep going.
No, I was just going to say the message that we're constantly giving out is I need you to change so that I can be okay.
Yes. Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
So I've seen you do some posts and talk about the ego work. And yeah. I love to like hear you talk about that, because that's also something that I think people are kind of learning about, but like don't fully understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. So our ego is always working in survival mode. You know, it's always looking to survive and be okay. And all of the survival mechanisms that it learned when we were kids. So it learned that our parents rewarded us for certain things and gave us love for certain things, and it punished us for others. And it's all the way we interpreted it, you know? So like if I, you know, was left at school and no one picked me up, then I interpreted that to mean something. It doesn't mean that my mom didn't love me, but that was the experience that I had.
Right.
Or if I was, like, for example, when I was little, I would try to get a lot of attention, like showing myself and showing my dancing and my singing and all that. And the moments that my family didn't pay attention to me, what I learned is this isn't okay. I should stay quiet and hold myself back because it's too hurtful to express myself and not get attention.
Yeah.
So that was my ego's way of, you know, making sure that I survive.
Interesting.
And at the time, sure, it did help me survive.
Right.
And even when we're babies, we learn that. The problem is that then we're adults and we're still operating from those mechanisms and we are not aware of it. Yeah. So we show up in a relationship and we don't express ourselves, thinking that it's going to be really unsafe to express ourselves, when really it's just this little kid that remembers how terrible it felt.
Yeah.
And it, like, you aren't aware of the fact that you have tools now. You're not a little kid that doesn't know what to do when no one's paying attention to you.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah. My partner does a lot of ego work. I have to say, at first I was a little bit taken back, because it's one of those things that when someone's calling you out on your bullshit, you're like, fuck you. I'm not going to listen to that. I don't want to look at that. And it's hard. I mean, you're faced with parts of yourself that you're like, I can't see that, but someone else can see that. And I don't want you to be right. So I'm going to fight you on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is, you either choose to be right or you choose to connect.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, I think one of the biggest things that I teach in my coaching is that it's not about having the other person agree with you. Yeah. You know, because a lot of people, what they argue is, why should I tell them what I think or what I want? They're never going to agree with me anyway. And really, we're really deep down, we're not actually looking for people to agree with us. We're actually looking for people to just see us and validate us.
Totally.
And if we can just share with someone, hey, this is how I feel, and someone says, wow, thank you for sharing. I really, you know, I value your feelings. Mm-hmm. That's it. Or if you ask someone, hey, this is my desire for us in this relationship, for someone to just say, I acknowledge and validate your desire, and I can't give that to you.
Wow. Okay. So that right there would trigger the fuck out of me.
Yeah. Tell me why.
Cause it's like, I need to be right. Why are you not validating that I'm, that I'm right?
Yeah. Why do you need to be right?
To feel like okay within myself. Like, it's almost like when I hear that, I'm like, that would piss me off. And I would become so angry if someone said that to me, like, I'm not getting my way.
Yeah.
Sort of situation is like what I would see it.
Yeah. So my question would be, what's the earliest memory you have from childhood where you didn't get your way?
A lot of times, but I can, like, frankly, this is going to sound hilarious, but I rarely did I not ever get my way until there was one moment when we were at a gas station and my dad wouldn't let me buy Starburst. And I kid you not, I will never forget about that, because my dad had never said no to me up until that point.
Wow.
And I was so angry.
Yeah. What did you make it mean?
I was like, how dare him? Like, how dare he, like, not give me my way? Like, why is he saying no to me right now? Mm-hmm. I always get my way. Mm. Oh God, I'm sounding like a horrible person.
No, not at all. I grew up always getting my way too.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is that most of us, like, then go to interpret that to mean that if someone's giving us our way, then that means they love us.
Yeah.
Well, and that, you know,
that's what I was going to say, because, like, my dad, I was the youngest, like, I was his little girl. So it was always like, you know, he was taking care of me. Like, he never said no to me. And then in this moment he did. And it was like, why aren't you taking care of me? Why don't you want to take care of me?
Yeah. So that, there it is. Because it didn't give you your way, you made it mean that that's not taking care of you.
Right.
As opposed to, like, you know, there's so many times that I didn't get my way and that was my parents' way of taking care of me.
Yeah. And it's so hard to see that.
Yeah. Well, yes, because that's exactly what it is. Our ego makes it hard for us to see that because we don't want to put our defenses down. Huh. You know, so that the anger is actually just a defense mechanism.
Okay.
from opening your heart and feeling what's there for you when someone says no.
Yeah.
It can hurt, and you can have your heart open at the same time, you know, and it can hurt and they're not doing anything wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, that just speaks to me because I'm the type of person that like, it's really hard for me, and I'm learning this now, to let my ego go. Like I will fight to the T until it means that like I'm right. Mm-hmm. And that in reality, like in hindsight, you look back and you're like, where did that actually get me? Like it didn't really get me anywhere. Like I didn't find like form a connected partnership. Like there was nothing that I was getting out of that other than the fact that like my ego was winning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. You either choose to be right or you choose to connect.
Wow.
And I think a lot, the mistake that a lot of us make is making ourselves wrong for our ego when, again, our ego is a little kid that just wants love and just wants to be validated.
Right.
Huh. That's all it wants.
Is that hard?
Yeah. No. Go for it.
I'm just curious, like with the women you work with, is that like, I mean, is it a challenge for them to let go of their egos? Do you see that a lot with?
Well, that's the thing. They're not letting go of their egos. They're actually having compassion for their ego and saying, oh, wow, this has just been me. This is just the inner 5-year-old taking care of me. Oh, that is so sweet. That's so sweet that the 5-year-old just wants me to be right because she thinks that that's how I'm going to be okay.
Do you work mostly, you said you're a woman's coach. Have you ever done like relationships, or is that kind of like your niche is like you like to focus on women?
Well, you know, even a relationship coach will focus individually on each person.
Okay.
Because it's all about you in the end. Your whole life is about you. Your whole life is just a mirror of what's going on inside. And that's why so much shit comes up in our relationships, because they're going to be showing us everything we don't approve of in ourselves and everything we love about ourselves. Wow. So it's, you know, that's why, like when they say relationships take work, it's really just working on yourself. It's really, you know, if your partner's triggering you because they're asking for a lot, the question really is, how much permission do you have for yourself to ask for a lot?
Right. So do you believe in the idea that like a relationship requires like a significant amount of work every day? Or do you see it more like what you were saying? Like, do you see it more as like, if you heal yourself, like your relationship is going to be not effortless, but almost just like aligned in an easy way, if that makes sense?
I think it works together.
Okay.
I think you're just constantly becoming aware of all the things that come up, because conflict will continue to come up for the rest of your life.
Right. Like how do you
know, it's a continuous taking a look at what's coming up and sharing with the other person. This is what's coming up for me. Hey, when you looked at your phone while I was talking, I made it mean that you don't really care about me. Oh, wow. And then, you know, you're just becoming aware of your shit together.
Yeah.
And something that we talk a lot about in our work is to first bring it to your sisters. Okay. You know, if something's going on, like don't always just bring it to the relationship, because we live in a world right now where our partners are everything. They're our best friend. They're our financial partners. They're our romantic lovers. They're everything. So it helps to, you know, work through the stuff before outside of the relationship and then come in the relationship feeling, you know, like you're not going to add that heaviness to the relationship. But we're relationship beings. Our trauma, most of it was created in relationships, so we heal it in relationship.
Gotcha.
It's not like go work on yourself and then like show up perfect.
Well, right. I worked with a guy who did a lot of, he does hypnotherapy, and this was a little while back. And, you know, I was explaining to him that like, and I'm a very open person, so I like will share this, but I was like, you know, explaining that like, I have a huge, what's the word? Like I struggle with commitment in relationships, because like when things are stable and they're calm, it's like, I grew up in such a chaotic household that I like tend to, I don't like that. Like, I don't like the calmness. And I was saying, like, you know, I was talking to him about my current relationship and how it's so fucking calm that, like, there I am running for the fucking door. And he said to me, he was like, your relationship that you're in right now is meant to heal the wound that you have with your mom. And, like, if you don't sit with this, it's like, you're not going to work through this wound. And I was like, how powerful is that? That, like, this other person can be healing something that, like, I never thought was really possible.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. Something that I would add, and I'll share a personal example, which is when I was building my coaching practice, I asked myself, what is it about being successful that scares me? Mm-hmm. And the answer was that then my life would be boring because I would have all these responsibilities, you know, just like you're kind of, you know, you just like you have an aversion to the calmness. I have an aversion to, like, boring, you know, and serious.
Right. Right.
So for me, it wasn't about getting rid of that and being like, oh, let me embrace boringness. It was like, okay, what are some healthy ways that I can introduce instability and excitement into my life, even while I'm successful? So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go skydiving. I'm gonna take spontaneous trips. It was like all these ways that had nothing to do with the excitement of being unsuccessful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So what I would ask you and any woman listening that's going through something similar is how can you create some healthy chaos in your relationship?
Oof. That's a really good question. Cause you don't hear that. Like, when you hear the word chaos, you think negativity.
Yeah.
But, like, how can you create, like, situations where, like, you don't, like, I, like, for me, I'm like, oh wow, what could I do differently where, like, I could add some excitement and, like, chaos and, like, actually have it be beneficial.
Exactly. Because that chaos, yeah, like you said, it's like, there's all these things that we make wrong. Yeah. And so we try to just, like, push those away, but what you resist persists.
Right.
It's not actually about pushing them away, getting rid of them, getting rid of your ego, like you said. Mm-hmm. It's actually working with it, embracing it.
So how would you, like, in a situation with a woman that, you know, does have a fear of commitment, or, like, how do you, like, what are the tactics that you take to, like, work with women to kind of get them to, I know that's a really hard question and you don't have to tell us all your secrets of coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, how do you do that? Like, that's so hard. That is so hard to A, have people want to face their own demons, and mm-hmm. B, like, get to a point where, like, the change is actually happening. I mean, I know for me, like, when I worked with coaches, it was like, I kind of, like, got to the point cause I was, like, sick of my own shit sort of stuff, but still, like, everything, things still come up. So I don't know. Is there, like, situations where it's been, like, very difficult with certain women, or do you feel like a lot of women that you're coming in contact with are, like, on a very similar path of, like, I'm here to do this work. I want to do it. I want to see a change.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think, hold on, let me wait for this. Okay. I think what's different about the kind of work that I do is that, you know, women show up and they're like, how do I stop being this and this and this and this? Mm-hmm. And I'm turning it around with them and saying, how can you love this and this and this and this?
Right. Yeah.
So that work that you used to find heavy and used to be scared of, like, looking at, suddenly you're coming in it with so much love and excitement and fulfillment.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah. So for example, let me think of an example. There was one client who she has a very type A boyfriend and she's very type B. So she's like, she doesn't have an alarm clock. She's all over the place. She doesn't really like structure.
That's like me.
And she triggers her husband a lot. Her husband triggers her a lot because they're so different. Mm-hmm. The question, you know, she came to me with a question. Okay, this is wrong. How do I structure myself? How do I stop this? And actually the question was, how do you love it? And how do you have approval for it? Once you have approval for it, it stops running your life. Mm-hmm. It stops becoming a problem. It doesn't have so much power over you.
Okay. Yeah. But how do you navigate that in terms of like a relationship with a partner? Like that's like so hard. I feel like to have those, I mean, I once dated a guy that it was a very similar from what you're saying. Like I'm type B. I'm like, you know, what's a phone? I don't even like, I mean, I know I have it, but it's always in the other room or something. And my gas tank was always like empty. And I was like always all over the place. And he could not accept me for who I was. And it was like, at a certain point, like I kept kind of like trying to work on these things and shift them and change them. But I felt so out of alignment with who I was and like letting myself just be. And like the relationship just kind of eventually like just, I mean, crumbled.
Yeah. And that makes so much sense because the relationship you have with yourself is going to mirror every single relationship in your life, like on some extent. So the approval that you have for yourself in your mess, in your type B, you're going to see in your relationship. All that you need to be concerned with is your own approval for it.
Yeah.
And if you get triggered by someone else, then that's just going to show you about yourself. So I'll give you an example. I'm very type B also, and I used to get really triggered by my type A partners. And it's like, you know, opposites attract.
Yeah.
I would get so triggered because I didn't have approval for my own inner type A.
Gotcha.
And I was type A about the way that I thought I should be. Like I, you know, something that I've been working on my whole life is how hard I've been on myself. So that's where my rigidity and my structure comes in of like this very strict idea of who I should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why these men would trigger me so much because there's actually a part of me that actually does want things to be my way. And I was not approving of that part. So that's why I wasn't approving it in them.
Whoa.
I've been spending my whole life trying to be go with the flow and like easy breezy because when I was little, I loved having things my way. I loved telling people what to do and it cost me friendships. So I said, oh, I need to stop being this way.
Yeah. Wow.
So do you see like what we learn in childhood, the messages we get is then what we think is right and wrong. And then we show up in our relationships thinking we're trying to do the right thing, but all that it really is about is coming back to being you're in your truth, being what comes natural to you without the filter of let me try to do the right thing or the wrong thing.
Oh my God. Literally, I'm learning so much. I have this question and I so badly want to ask it because I'm so curious I'm sure that you've seen this, but what is like the biggest mistake that you see women making in relationships with men, like just in like every day to day or romantically, like, yeah.
Oh my God. I'll just share the one that stands out to me the most that I love, which is women holding themselves back to not be needy.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah. Men want to see and feel us, you know, that's part of being in the feminine pole, you know, opening our hearts and showing them what's there, telling them how they're making us feel, not telling them that they should take a course or that they should go see a therapist. They just want to feel us.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, so many women out there are so concerned with not being needy. So it's like, oh, should I ask this? Should I say that? Should I not ask what he wants in this relationship, that's going to push him away. It's his obsession with pushing them away.
Yeah.
But they're not realizing that this whole time, all they're doing is being needy because all they're doing is focusing on them, focusing on what do they want? How do I change myself for them? and the thing is that in the end of the day, there's nothing actually wrong with being needy. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of needs.
Right. Right. And I think this idea of like, the cool girl. I used to play that game and it fucking
ditto.
Nowhere. Like I actually listened to a podcast with Julia Shepley, and she talks about that because, like, I mean, Julia is like a cool girl. So it's like natural that you would think she'd be like the cool girl. And then hearing like someone, you know, talk openly about how it's like, yeah, I did that for years and it got me nowhere. And I was left completely unfulfilled. None of my needs were met. And the only person that was hurt was myself.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can totally agree. I mean, I just knew exactly what was going to get men. I was so good at it. Like, I would teach my friends about how to give eye contact and smile at men so that they are just, you know, hooked to you and walk over to you at a bar. And I was in a course with Amy once, who, you know, led the course we had together. Yeah. And she said, you're either going to get your heart broken or you're the heartbreaker. And my whole life, I've been the heartbreaker. And it makes sense why, you know, those relationships never really, you know, went as far as they could have gone. Cause I've just haven't allowed myself to go into my heartbroken. And it took for me to realize, okay, if I want to have a close, intimate, loving relationship, it's going to entail me being willing to have my heart broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause trust me, I've broken multiple hearts. Like, there's men who I've literally, like, yeah, it's, you know, I have a roster, and it's funny, you know, it's like something that's just, yeah, that was me. I used to really value being the one in control. That's really what it's all about. It's being in control and being in power.
Yes.
And being in love has nothing to do with control.
Yeah. So tell me about that. Okay. So it's really hard because my partner will be like, you're just trying to control the situation right now. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm doing this because I love you. And he's like, no, you're doing this out of control. So explain to me that, like, the relationship between control and love and how we misinterpret it and all of that, because I feel like a lot of people just don't even have any idea that they're doing these things out of their own sense of, like, fulfillment to have control.
Yeah, absolutely. Control comes from, in some way, looking for perfection. When we have a decision and we split it into here's the right one, here's the wrong one, we're actually not aware of the fact that we're looking for perfection in that moment. And there's no such thing as perfection, and there's no such thing as the right thing. Mm-hmm. But we're constantly trying to do that. That's what our ego does.
Wow.
Yeah. We're constantly trying to, like, you know, I have a mentor who says that there's actually no such thing as decisions. We just create decisions by naming something the right thing and naming something the wrong thing. But there's really just a bazillion things. We create that so that we can seek perfection. And that's what we're doing when we're trying to look for control. We're trying to just, like, have a position. That's what the ego wants. It wants to have a position. So, like, that's when, you know, when we want to be the victim or the hero, that's positioning ourselves, separating ourselves from others. Whereas love has to do with coming together. Love is being present with the moment, being present with what is. Not trying to find a position.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. When we are looking for control, we're trying to be the right one and call them the wrong one. And that's just for us to feel okay, because we think that's what's going to make us feel safe. That's all we're looking for in the end of the day. Safety.
Whoa. So on that note, like, getting to the point where you don't need that, like that comes from, would you say, learning to trust yourself? Or does it come from, like, how do you get to that point of, like,
that's why you come to work with someone like me or a therapist or, right, an astrologer, whoever, you know, that's the important. That is why it's so important to seek someone to help, because all those things are not what we see. We actually, it helps to have someone shine light on what we can't see. Mm-hmm. On something like, oh, you're like, this is coming out of your, you know, this is happening because you're looking for control. Mm-hmm. And for you to be able to see it in yourself, you know, it's someone to mirror back to you what's going on within you, because we're just looking at everything through our own eyes.
Yeah.
There's so many things that are in our blind spots.
Yeah. And I love the, like, Amy actually said this to me once. She was like, I have a coach who has a coach. Like, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that for me, I got trapped in this mindset of like, well, if I'm in a position where like my relationship's good or things are good in my life, like, why do I need to do that? But things are always going to come up. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I think we forget that we all used to live in tribes, and there used to be a tribe healer, and there used to be communities of women that were always there to support you. And now we're actually living in very individualistic times where kids are even being raised by just two parents, whereas back in the day, they were raised by a village. You know, that's why they say it takes a village.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. And the healer was just there present for the tribe always. They were very valued in community and very normalized and part of, you know, society.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, like, what is your relationship with how is that your relationship with sisterhood changed throughout like your journey of doing this work with men?
Yeah. That has changed so much. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm trying to think. I mean, I used to be very afraid of other women. And, you know, I think my worrying about my looks had to do more with impressing other women than impressing men. Because I've always been like fairly confident around men.
Yeah.
But it was around women, all the comparison, mm-hmm. all the, yeah, like trying to one up each other. And that's actually sort of in biologically part of us, they say, like, because back in the day we were competition for each other, for the men of the tribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So it changed a lot for me. I got to see how women can support each other and not compete against each other, mm-hmm. how being vulnerable with women didn't make me weak or didn't make me not cool. Also how we're all experiencing the same insecurities.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, right now I'm working, I'm supporting Amy and Ellie.
Yeah.
In creating this event. And most of us are coaches. Most of us have our coaching practices, and we're coaches supporting other coaches because there's no scarcity.
Right.
You know, the abundance is flowing by them helping, by me helping them. It's helping me.
Totally. And I think that's like with women, we get so like, yeah, in competition with another woman. And it's like, she's doing that, I can't do that or something, rather than being like, well, what am I going to learn from her? And what is she going to learn from me? And how can we both grow from this situation? So I know we're kind of on the wrapping it up time, but I wanted to ask you, like, if in your practice as a coach, like, what advice could you offer women that don't know much about this work and that are kind of starting on their own journey and wanting to change their relationship with men and themselves? And like, if there's any piece of advice that you feel like you could really offer, what would that be?
Oh,
I know.
That's wait. Yeah. Ask me one more time.
Okay. So like, if you could offer any sort of advice that you feel has impacted you, or that is some of the most beneficial advice you think you could give to our listeners or just any woman out there that's starting on their own journey of healing their relationship with men, what would that be? Or their relationship to themselves, really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, of course, like, the first advice would be to work with someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Invest in yourself. It is the best investment that you can make.
Yeah.
And that the world around you is just mirroring back everything that's going on inside you. So every way that you say other people aren't showing up for you, or everything that you say people are doing to you, it's just there for you to ask yourself how you can do that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think people aren't paying attention to you, the question really is, where can you pay attention to yourself?
Okay.
and that everything is happening for you, not to you.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, that's where I would start. But this is, yeah, and like, this is a long journey, and it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
So things will always come up, and just let yourself enjoy it. Don't take it too seriously.
Totally.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? So you're doing this weekend. Is it a retreat, or is it just like a 3-day with Ellie?
Yeah. So that's Amy and Ellie's weekend.
Yeah.
Women can connect with me on Instagram.
Cool.
I have a program coming up in 2 weeks. If anyone's, you know, if this is coming out really soon, my program is called Fully Self-Expressed, and it's about how to express yourself unapologetically in relationships. Ask for what you want, share your feelings, and, you know, feel confident, not feel all that shame and guilt that we always feel.
Yeah.
And then I have a program coming up that I'm leading with another coach, Taylor, and that one's called Undaughtering.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And that one is incredible. It's a 4-month program where we're going to be leading women into going from showing up as daughters in their relationship to sovereign women. Wow. So all of the good girl conditioning that comes up in your relationships, it's all because you're basically playing the daughter role in your relationships.
Huh.
So it's like it's all that good girl conditioning that's coming up in your relationship. So moving from the good girl conditioning to being a sovereign woman, to not relating to your partner the way that you relate to your parents.
Damn.
It's going to be.
Whoa. When does that one come out?
That one starts in January. And it's going to be fire. Yeah. It's like, we're going to go deep because, like I said, I think the whole work around your parents thing mm-hmm. has been done in a very antiquated way where you go to therapy and you just talk about it. And we're going to be doing it our way. You know, we're going to be doing it with all the shadow work and all of the, you know, all the coaching tools that you've seen in this women's work.
Yeah.
Wow. So you get to heal your relationship with your parents and heal your relationship with your partners and sex.
Damn. Oh my gosh. That is going to be really powerful.
Yeah. So if anyone's interested, send me a DM and I'll send along all the information. And then the last thing I'll mention is that I have my own podcast, Commitment Phobe, where I share the story of how I, you know, dealt with all my commitment phobia and intimacy fears. And I speak to all the experts that helped me break out of that.
Wow. I'm going to need to listen to that right now. I love that. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's so good to see you too. I'm hopeful that I'll get to like one of Amy and Ellie's things, or please, I'm going to send you a DM about your program. So thank you so much.